welcome to the MJA podcast. I am Kate Swanell and I am the Journal's news and online editor. My special guest today is Dr. Adam Volchuk, who is the Youth Cancer Services and Clinical Trials Manager for Canteen. Adam and his co-authors have written a perspective on improving outcomes for low survival cancers in adolescents and young adults, which will be available at mja.com.au from the 15th of October. Welcome to the pod, Adam. So we're talking about rare and low survival cancers in adolescents and young adults. What are the overall cancer survival rates for this age group, and why are those numbers a little bit deceptive?
So the overall survival rates for AYAs with cancer are sitting around about 89%. Mm-hmm. That's actually coming from recent data released by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, one of the most recent reports. So, I mean, that on the face of it sounds really good. In fact, it's slightly better even than what pediatric cancer populations experience. Right. And it's on a par with adults sort of between the ages of about 25 and 39. That sounds great in and of itself. The problem is that this high survival rate masks some poor outcomes for some of the rarer cancers that young people get. And it also masks some of the differential outcomes for some cancers that young people get that also appear in pediatric populations, where the pediatric populations fare a lot better on treatment than the adolescents and young adults do. So a couple of really good examples. One of them would be Ewing sarcoma. That's one of the top 10 most common cancers diagnosed in adolescents and young adults.
Okay.
But the survival rate is actually quite low. It's sitting down around about 46%. So that's really not great in the grand scheme of things. When you're talking about some of the highest survival cancers for this population, would be thyroid cancers, mm-hmm. and that's sitting about 99%. You've got the other end of the spectrum here with Ewing's. If we talk about some of the cancers that have that differential survival, we're talking about in pediatric populations, a cancer like acute lymphoid leukemia is around about 92% survival.
Mm-hmm.
In adolescents, young adults, it's only 79%.
Wow.
Ewing sarcoma, 84% in younger children, 46% in adolescents, young adults. And then, you know, a smaller difference, but still an important one would be the cluster of gonadal germ cell tumours. They're 100% survival in children,
yes.
97% in adolescents and young adults. There's some distinction there to draw in those survival rates that I think gets lost just
yes.
by looking at how good it is overall.
So what is it about AYAs that makes their survival worse? In some of these cases, is it a physiological thing with them, or is it about access of care? And
it's a combination of those things.
Mm.
So there's emerging evidence that suggests there's some physiological differences.
Yeah.
So you know, both in terms of genomic expression in this population, things around their metabolism, all of those sorts of things appear to be having an impact on how. Not only how the cancer progresses in that population, but also how they respond to treatment. One of the challenges is that they're because of the poor access to clinical trials for young people, not just in Australia but worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
There are often not clearly established treatment protocols specifically for adolescents and young adults. So they either get treated with an adult protocol, which may not respond to particularly well,
mm-hmm.
or they might get treated with a pediatric protocol, and they may respond well to it. They may not. In fact, there's some evidence that that adolescents and young adults respond better to pediatric protocols, which are a little bit more aggressive in terms of the
right.
chemotherapy, radiotherapy regimens. Certainly they respond better than older adults would. They seem to be able to tolerate it better. But often those pediatric protocols are not what they'll be treated with, because one of the challenges for adolescents and young adults is they're treated in both pediatric and adult settings, often depending on their age,
yes.
But also depending on the type of cancer that they've got. So one of the reasons why Canteen worked with the Commonwealth government and hospitals around the country many years ago now to establish the Youth Cancer Services. It's a coordinated network specifically focused on providing age-appropriate multidisciplinary care to adolescents and young adults. And one of the key functions of that network is trying to match the best treatment with the young person that has cancer, regardless of whether they're treated in a pediatric and adult setting. Yeah. So that network operates across both settings to try and get that really optimal outcome for the patient, regardless of where they're treated.
Is it fair to say that cancer treatment for AYAs has to be much more personalised?
I think cancer treatment is better when it's personalised for all patients, not just for AYAs, sure. But it's certainly an important consideration because, a 14-year-old with a Ewing's sarcoma may not respond anything like a 25-year-old Ewing's sarcoma. So there does need to be some of that consideration, and it's heartening to see some evidence emerging about how clinicians can understand that personalised response and the personalised treatment a little bit better. But there's a long way to go. To your question earlier about is this partly to do with clinical trials access? It certainly is.
Yes.
One of the reasons why survival has improved so much in children is because they have really high rates of participation in clinical trials.
Yeah.
Sometimes up in the 40% range, whereas for adolescents and young adults, we're still down in single digits in most instances, and that's really a function of that variable treatment setting. So, they may not be in a hospital that has the clinical trial that they need to access. For instance, if they're an older adolescent and young adult diagnosed and treated in an adult setting, but they're diagnosed with a pediatric type tumour, they will not be able to access a trial that might be in the hospital right next door that's focused on that particular pediatric tumour because it's restricted to that hospital and a childhood age range. So it's a complex area, but there's some will to address some of the structural changes that are needed in our clinical trials environment here in Australia.
And what changes are those? What do we need?
So I think some of those changes are around things like age limits. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most common barriers is the age limit barrier. So a pediatric trial will only be open up to a certain age that's reflective of a pediatric setting. So, an older AYA just can't access that trial because of that. There's also challenges around, this is particularly in terms of accessing the pediatric trials. There's accreditation systems that exist internationally that mean only certain hospitals will be accredited to conduct that trial, usually under the Children's Oncology Group or COG accreditation standards. There's some interesting work ongoing at the moment to try and have some more flexible approaches to accrediting centres to be able to conduct those trials so that perhaps we can get some adult trials, adult settings conducting some of those pediatric clinical trials as well, which would really help this population. I think the other thing that's needed is really just investment in this. They're often a forgotten age group because they are complex and because the cancers that they get don't often pop up in Australia as a priority for clinical trials. So, we're fortunate here at Canteen to have had some investment from the Medical Research Future Fund to establish an AYA clinical trials initiative to allow some of that targeted investment, particularly in some of those lower survival cancers, basically to raise the priority and the possibility of getting young people involved in clinical trials that can not only improve standards of treatment in the future, but potentially save their lives right now.
My guest today is Dr. Adam Volchuk from Canteen, and we're talking about improving outcomes for teens and young adults with rare and low survival cancers. His co-authored perspective on the topic can be found at mja.com.au from the 15th of October. Don't forget that the 3rd Global Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Congress will be in Sydney this year from 4th to the 6th of December. For more information, Google the name of the conference and you'll find all the details there. Is it difficult to get pharmaceutical companies interested in this kind of research and development?
It can be where the return on investment is likely to be less, and that comes into play when you're talking about the rarer cancers. And I mean, cancer is rare by definition in AYAs because you're talking about an incidence of only about 1,000 young people in Australia per year. One of the challenges is that this population in every country around the world is really siloed. There's few opportunities to come together and address the issue of AYA cancer internationally, which might help to make that argument for a return on investment in this population. There's about 1 million young people around the world diagnosed each year with cancer in this kind of adolescent young adult age range, but you can't pulled together a trial that operates across all settings around the country to address those 1 million young people. You know, there's some logical reasons why those trials haven't been conducted, because it is challenging to make that return on investment argument when you're talking about a small population that resultant drug might be available for. But there are opportunities to address that through different methods. So one of the challenges is having to invest so much money in the multiple steps of the clinical trial pathway. The large late phase clinical trials are particularly challenging to conduct, because they have to either be open for an awful long time to get sufficient data to reach your endpoints, or they have to be open in many, many, many hospitals around the world in order to reach that endpoint. So really, I think the better option is to include consideration of AYAs in other trials that are ongoing that might be of benefit to them. So whether that's extending age ranges up or down, or looking more at the types of trials that target, for instance, basket trials that target a genomic aberration rather than a disease as such. So you might be trialing a drug that targets a genomic aberration that arises in lots of different cancers.
Yes.
That kind of approach might be more appropriate for the AYA age group. So some of those novel methods are really where there's an opportunity to make a change.
Are there things working in other countries we could adopt here?
I think there's been some work that was undertaken in the UK some years ago now that really made an impact in terms of improving clinical trials access rates.
Yes.
That was things like mandating the removal of some of the arbitrary age limits, unless they were scientifically sound reasons for having them in the trial. Some investment in public awareness around participation in clinical trials, targeting some of those age groups that have the lower, or age groups and population groups that have the lower participation rates. And I think, you know, it's great to see that kind of public awareness drive is starting to happen in Australia, and a number of other initiatives as well to improve the visibility of the trials that young people could be eligible for amongst the clinicians who treat them. So some of those things were undertaken in the UK, and they did show some promising improvements in their trial participation rates for a period of time only, and that's really down to
there
was a group of very appropriate trials open for young people at that particular point in time, and then those trials ended, but new ones hadn't come on stream by that stage. So it seems to me that a combination of both those kind of initiatives to improve trials access whilst also ensuring that there's funding and the will to keep opening trials that are appropriate for the population is probably where you're going to get the best improvements.
Does Australia have a cohesive national strategy for this age group and for these kinds of cancers?
I think in terms of the cohesive national strategy to treating this age group, then there certainly is a cohesive approach to that, and that really comes in the form of the Youth Cancer Services Program and the Australian Young Cancer Patient Clinical Trials Initiative. So they're the two Commonwealth government-funded initiatives that Canteen manages nationally, and we work with partner hospitals around the country to disseminate those funds and to support the running of those clinical services and investment in clinical trials. So there's certainly strategic investment in those areas. I think what is perhaps needed is a focus on a broader strategic framework for addressing rare cancers as a group nationally. So rare cancers disproportionately impact adolescents and young adults.
Yes.
And rare cancers are actually, you know, despite the name, quite common in Australia. They make up a substantial burden of the total cancer burden in Australia, and actually make up close to the majority of the mortality burden of cancers in Australia. So perhaps the argument is not so much about addressing just AYA cancers. It's important that we do address just AYA cancers, but there's also an argument for addressing rare cancers more broadly through a strategic approach that is inclusive of adolescents and young adults. And this is not just something about investment in clinical trials. It's also investment in awareness. It's investment in early detection, critically, because this is one of the challenges, is that rare cancers are often diagnosed quite late or at quite an advanced stage. And so there's a lot of different areas that need to be addressed to truly address the burden of these cancers, and an awful lot of partners that can play a positive role in that. It's not just a matter for, you know, departments of health to address this. There's also a vital role for the not-for-profit health sector to play, for clinicians to play, industry, and also community groups as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's value that all of those groups can bring to the table to address this in a comprehensive way.
I'm fascinated by the physiological aspects of this, because it's almost like teenagers are aliens at the best of times. Do you know what I mean? It's like they have a whole foreign thing going on here where these cancers sort of target them.
And look, it's fortunate to be, you know, as I said before, a relatively rare occurrence in young people. Mm-hmm. But it is a challenging thing. It's not just a matter of the challenge of having cancer. They have an awful lot going on in their lives that extraordinarily disrupted by a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You know, they're sort of transition out of the home and into independent life, the transition out of school and into work, formation of friendships. There's so much going on for them that this is an extraordinary upheaval to deal with, you know, quite apart from these you know, the challenges of survival and treatment. And ideally what I think would be an extraordinary boon for young people is the idea that they could have treatment that is likely to have a less of an impact on them throughout their lives. That is an issue as well, that, you know, with a survival rate as high as 89%, that's an awful lot of years of life to live with some of the very significant after effects of cancer and its treatment. Yes. You know, we recently commissioned some work with Deloitte Access Economics that identified some of the economic impact of a diagnosis of cancer during the adolescent and young adult years, and it's in the millions of dollars that it costs for each young person diagnosed. So there's a need to address the sort of treatment gap for some of these cancers for these young people.
If you had a magic wand, Adam, what would you do first?
I think I would bring together all the right minds to address this in a cohesive kind of way. I think there's so much goodwill and so much good effort to make things better for this population, mm-hmm. In Australia and internationally. But individuals can only do so much.
Yes.
I think that bringing those efforts together, there's a lot of efficiency to be found in that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people doing similar things at the same time that could learn from one another and benefit from one another's experience. But there's also, small discoveries, small pieces of work that when you bring them together can have a much bigger impact. So I think that's really the direction that we need to head if we want to address not just, rare and low survival cancers in young people, but rare and low survival cancers in all Australians. The thing that I would like to highlight, you know, off the back of both the establishment of the Medical Research Future Fund and also the conduct of the Senate inquiry into funding for rare and low survival cancer research, there's a lot of good action that seems to be starting to ferment. There's the targeted investments that the Medical Research Future Fund has made in things like adolescent and young adult cancer. You know, mm-hmm. I say again, Canteen is extraordinarily, fortunate to have received some great targeted funding in that, which, you know, we would advocate to continue. There's also some targeted investment in rare cancers and rare diseases that's been recently announced by the Commonwealth government. Those things are a wonderful starting place, and a wonderful opportunity as well is coming through in some of the changes that the NHMRC is making to the way that it funds idea-based research.
Yes.
And early career researchers who want to basically want to take up a career looking at things like rare diseases. In the past, that's been challenging for people to make a career of that.
Yes.
Because the system hasn't quite supported it. I think some of these changes demonstrate a great will to address some of these cancers head on and some of the rarer diseases besides cancers head on. I think with that starting place, there's a great deal of work that we can do through that collaborative approach to improve outcomes for these Australians.
Thanks, Adam, and thank you for the work Canteen does.
Thank you.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.